Hello, friends. We are back with episode 128 of the Our Weekly Highlights podcast. And it's hard to believe, but we are just about halfway through the year of our Weekly content for 2023. But we got a great issue to talk about today and certainly much more to come in the future. My name is Eric Nance, and I'm so glad you joined us today from wherever you are listening. And of course, joining me as always, right at the hip here, so to speak, virtually, is my co-host, Mike Thomas. Mike, how are you doing this morning?
Doing well, Eric. It's heating up here on the East Coast. The highlights are heating up, and we are getting closer and closer to Posit Conference in Chicago. So lots to look forward to.
It's all getting real, as they say, and real fast. So, yep, we got some cool work that we got to do very soon. But also, yeah, we're very excited for what's about to happen in the future. And one quick little scheduling note, we will not be recording next week because yours truly will be probably either on a beach somewhere or running around after kids on the East Coast somewhere. So I will not have my mics with me, so I will be away from keyboard, as they say. But hopefully we'll keep you satisfied this week and we'll be back, you know, square away in a couple of weeks from now.
Unless you want me to go rogue and just record a super spicy takes version of our weekly highlights next week, Eric. Happy to do that.
You have access to the back end, so you know I can't stop you either way. So.
Uh-oh.
But in any event, we're not stopping this episode, right? We are on issue 2023, week 26, that has been curated by Colin Fay. And as always, he had tremendous help from our fellow Our Weekly team members and contributors, like all of you around the world. And for our first highlight, I will say this prompts some flashbacks to my adventures in processing office documents in R. I've had some successful conquests, as they say, and I've had some very bewildering exercises and frustration throughout these processes. Now, in my industry of life sciences, we have a lot of legacy pipelines that produce these analysis tables and listings into office-like formats, including the dreaded RTF. We're not going to talk about RTF today, thank goodness. Well, sometimes you do have to roll the punches and figure out a way to what I'll call unlock these results from the confines of the output file. I've had a more abrasive term for this in the past, so I'm trying to be positive here today. But this isn't just an issue with life sciences. We're seeing this also happen in the government, public sector as well. And Matt Dre returns to our Weekly Highlights to lead off this first highlight and how he tackled translating Microsoft Word tables into Markdown directly. You heard that right, Markdown directly. In fact, Matt's blog post details his new R package on his GitHub called WordUp. I love that name, by the way, if you couldn't tell. I just can't name anything worth a look, but boy, our highlights contributors sure can. Well, this package, in what seems a lot like magic to me, lets you either copy the text of the Word table literally into your clipboard and then run the function, which will automatically grab the clipboard contents, or you can paste the contents into the function itself in its parameter called table2govspeak, more on that in a minute, and then you will have in the output a Markdown compliant table, literally within a second or less. How in the world is this possible? Like I said, it seems like magic to me. Well, behind the scenes, one reason that a package like Matt's can exist, as well as the packages and what's called the Officeverse that David Goho maintains, is that these Office documents, whether they're the Microsoft Office documents or those written in, say, LibreOffice or OpenOffice, they're using the OpenXML standard for Office. Meaning that these files will look like a typical file, right? But behind the scenes, they're basically an archive, almost like a zip file, of a boatload of XML documents under the hood. Well, XML is much easier to scrape, so to speak, than, you know, plain text documents that you might have in your text editor. And so thanks to advancements in this space, we can leverage those XML documents and grab the metadata for the tables and the like. And Matt does exactly that in his package here. It actually doesn't depend on anything from the Officeverse. His dependencies are quite lean, literally just the dependencies to scrape this XML information and a little bit more for the clipboard management. So this GovSpeak markdown apparently is a specific flavor for the UK's public documents for plain text and markdown. So Matt has done a great job of conforming to this format for this package. And like I said, it does a terrific job. I couldn't believe it works as seamlessly as it does. Now, Matt's quick to say you probably don't want to run this yourself. He's still working on things and iterating. But boy, if that doesn't unlock the potential, so to speak, of getting these output results from the table that looks like a highly stylized version in a Word document into Markdown, which is obviously a type of syntax I use daily now in my work and my personal projects, this is a huge win and a huge kind of like showcase into what's possible. So congratulations, Matt, on persevering through, I'm sure, has been an interesting journey in debugging and trying to get these results out of the Word document. So kudos to you for persevering through this.
No, this is absolutely amazing. And, you know, I think this is sort of speaking to another situation where us as data scientists would probably like to output our results in one format, but the powers that be are looking for these results to be in another format. So that's where any tool that helps us with that interoperability, you know, Qordo helps us a ton with that interoperability between LaTeX and HTML and PDF and Word conversion. And this is just another package here that I think can help us in these types of workflows. And it's definitely the first one that I've seen that outputs a raw markdown table. I have seen other packages such as the Data Pasta package, which has a slew of authors behind it, all names that you'll recognize, Eric. And that one is pretty incredible because it allows you to like highlight text or a table from HTML or CSV or Excel and essentially copy it and paste it right into RStudio using an add-in that the package enables. And then all of a sudden, it'll format code for a tibble containing the data that you just pasted in there. And that's pretty incredible if you are looking more so for the code to generate that table as opposed to the raw markdown. So it's nice to have both of these tools, and I'm excited to see sort of how WordUp evolves. I know it's very much in the experimental phase right now, but hopefully some folks reading this blog post or listening to these highlights can take it for a spin themselves and provide some feedback and maybe iron out any wrinkles that currently exist so that we can get this thing into a pretty robust place.
Yeah, and at the risk of getting onto a little bit of soapbox here, I do hope other agencies around the world start to use, you know, formats like Markdown to exchange document information and getting away from more of the proprietary formats. Now, when I say that, these newer document formats are not technically proprietary, right? But there has been some consternation online that sometimes Microsoft put their own little sugar on top of this open XML standard. So you got to watch it a little bit. That's why I certainly hope plain text and markdown and other HTML-like formats start to take foothold, and we got a ways to go. But hey, I'm happy that there is at least one agency that is looking at this a little bit. And up next in our highlights, we're happy to put a continuation on a topic that we covered a few episodes ago, or perhaps months ago, where we often talk about, you know, there's a lot of great advancements in education and data science and teaching you some practicalities of the industry, but there can be a lot of nuggets missed when it comes to the day-to-day of perhaps building models, releasing those into production, working with stakeholders on feedback for iteration in your training and testing and things like that. Well, in our next highlight, we have Matt Kay, who is a data scientist at College Vine, returning with a wrap-up post in his series that he calls The Missing Semester of Your Data Science Education. And specifically, he has a great narrative blog post here about once you have your model, just how can you enable others to use it for their data science pipelines. So, Mike, why don't you take us through a journey on what Matt covers here in this great post here?
Definitely. This is a topic, you know, that we've heard about before, but I think it's one that we can absolutely use a lot of content around and a lot of reminders about. And like you said, this looks to be potentially the last blog post, maybe from Matt, in a phenomenal series that includes everything from workflow orchestration for retraining and monitoring models, unit testing for ensuring that your code is correct, and experiment tracking and model versioning for keeping track of what's actually running in production at any given time, and dependency management and Docker for packaging up your analytical code. So take a look at this whole entire series, not just this blog post, because it's a phenomenal work that sort of all fits together. And this post covers what Matt calls online inference, which is hosting your model somewhere where it can be called upon at any time to make a prediction. And importantly, somewhere where others can utilize it, right? And this is opposed to batch inference, where you might run a bunch of observations through the model as a one-time exercise or on a daily or weekly basis, for example. So when we want to serve a model to make predictions in real time, the best practice way to do this is via a REST API. And Plumber is perhaps the most commonly used package for doing so, but I believe there are other options out there as well. I think we've had some blog posts on that as well. But Matt showcases how to create multiple methods in your API in case you need to do multiple things. You know, his example is just a hello world echo method, as well as a predict method that you can call your model from. And lastly, Matt discusses at a high level how to deploy your model inside of a Docker container so that it can run somewhere other than your local machine, so you don't have to keep your own PC on all the time for the users that want to leverage your model within the REST API service. And he provides a ton of links to resources to help you out with that, because there is a lot of documentation available from both the Plumber package down site, as well as all sorts of other resources that are out there for helping you get started with Plumber and Docker. And lastly, I did want to touch on the fact that Matt does mention in his blog post that he doesn't recommend using Plumber or R itself in any sort of high load or high throughput production system for reasons that are beyond the scope of the post that he wrote. I know that I'm sure he has good reason for those sentiments. I'm sure it's something that he has experienced firsthand. But I wouldn't be doing my job as our weekly podcast host if I didn't provide some counter argument that there are folks out there who are using Plumber and R to serve models that are hit millions of times per day. And maybe the best example I can give is the website putrinprod.com. Check that website out to see how Heather and Jacqueline Nolas put R models, neural networks no less, in production at T-Mobile that experienced very high traffic from the entire customer service team. And perhaps a hint at what may hit a future edition of the highlights, I did see on Mastodon recently that Will Landau, colleague of yours, Eric, just authored a new R package for scheduling and parallelizing your R code called Crew, which, as we know, can be super valuable. Parallelization can be super valuable within your REST API service model for allowing concurrent use or concurrent calls to that REST API service, because we know R is single-threaded, but we do have resources like Crew, Promises, Future, things like that, that can help essentially make R run simultaneously, concurrently in multiple processes instead of just that single thread. So lots to check out here. Great blog post by Matt. And we're looking forward to hearing more feedback from folks out there on how you put your R models in production.
Yeah, it is a very excellent write-up. And again, things that someone like me back in the old days of learning statistics and data science would have loved to have had a primer on as I was before I took my foothold into the industry, so to speak. So lots of great principles here. I do admit, when I first read it, I didn't see that little caveat that he put in there kind of stuck out at me, because in the back of my mind, I did have exactly what you said, Mike. We saw that talk from Jacqueline and Heather Nolas on the use of, you know, Plumber and their high load workflows with APIs and modeling fits at T-Mobile. So I know it definitely is possible. you know, sometimes you might need a little help to orchestrate all of it because that goes beyond R, right? That's how you handle dependency management. That's how you handle high load for just your server architecture. So that's obviously a whole other topic in its entirety. But I think we are seeing some great advancements, not only with the tooling that Matt talks about here, but then kind of like layers on top of that to make it easy to deploy these models, such as Vetiver from Deposit, you know, Tidy Models team. That's another great advancement and encapsulates a lot of these principles in an easy to use fashion for getting started and everything. But in essence, this has got great content here. And again, check out the rest of Matt's series here, because there are a lot of fundamental issues that, again, you're not going to find those classic tech books, you know, or those boot camps. These are all very much lessons I can tell he has learned from his experience in the industry. So yeah, great, great call outs to a lot of key principles. But yeah, we love to hear feedback from all of you on your success stories of following these principles in your production workflows, because I think we all have stories, and hopefully most of them are good, but you know, sometimes you have a lot of learning along the way. But Mike, I remember in this post you said something about Docker containers, right?
Yes, he does. What a segue.
Couldn't have drew it up better myself, because our last highlight, which admittedly came literally hot off the presses before we recorded this, is about an issue that can bite many package authors, is that you've made your package, right? You've done your local testing. It works great. You've passed all your tests. You've run DevTools check, and it looks like everything passes. You submit to CRAN, you're crossing your fingers, but then you get that dreaded note. It fails on one or more of the system architectures that the CRAN servers use. Maybe it's Solaris. I'm just saying. But in any event, you're kind of wondering, what do I do next? Well, luckily, there are resources in place for you to get ahead of this issue. And Sebastian Rochette, who has been featured on the highlights quite recently, makes another return to the highlights with his latest blog post on how he's tackled an esoteric package build issue with their recently released package called Check Helper, which honestly is a great find in and of itself. But what happened when they were submitting this package, or at least checking the build of it, is that it did fail on Fedora Linux. Fedora is a Linux distribution that doesn't sometimes get as much attention in the data science community as distributions like Ubuntu, but this is from contributors mostly at Red Hat, so it kind of feeds into the Red Hat Enterprise distribution and is a little different than Ubuntu. So Sebastian's wondering, why would it fail there? Well, Sebastian makes a quick note that they are leveraging a service called R-Hub. If you haven't heard about R-Hub, it is basically a service that's provided free of charge to the R community to hold build architectures for checking your package on the similar set of architectures that the CRAN servers would use, which is hugely important so that you can check if your package builds correctly before you actually do your submission. And so hopefully in R-Hub, everything goes smoothly. But what if it fails on one of those build platforms, like it did here with Fedora? Well, in Sebastian's blog post here, he talks about the R-Hub package that you can use to basically interface with the R-Hub cloud service. It doesn't just let you interface with the cloud service. It has a way, if you have Docker on your system, to build a container of those exact same system architectures on your local system, which means you could run a local build of this same version of Linux in R-Hub, orchestrated via Docker, get that container up and running, and you can connect to that container, launch R, try building your package, and literally see where it fails. And then you can iterate in this container and say, oh, maybe I missed a dependency for SSL or some other library that another package depends on. You could throw it on that container instance, run the build again, and maybe you fixed it. Now, if you quit that container session right away, guess what? That's kind of like closing a document without saving. You've lost that work. So there, Sebastian's post covers a way for you to tag a new version of that container that you've done in your iteration in case you want to go back to it later and not have to rebuild the thing and redo all those installation steps for that library. But in any event, imagine how cool this is. When we submit a package of CRAN, we don't get to like go to the point of failure programmatically and figure out just what happened. We have to depend on the note we get and hope we can reverse engineer it. Well, the combination of our hub and spinning up a Docker container locally is a much easier way to debug this before you go for that submission process. I did not know the rhub package could spin these containers locally. That is a huge find for me. And then also Sebastian's post wraps up by plugging what is probably my favorite extension in VS Code, the Remote Explorer extension, which lets you connect to this running container in VS Code, get a terminal into that container, and launch R and run your commands just like I just described without having to be in only a terminal to do it. I live this life every day, literally. Every time I boot up VS Code, I'm in a remote development container. So this is a natural thing for my workflow to adopt. And if I'm in the situation where I hope to be in the future of submitting a package of CRAN again, you better believe I'll be looking at Sebastian's post to check rhub first and check it locally before I go to that next step of the sometimes precarious method of submitting the CRAN itself. So I'm so glad Sebastian put this out there because, again, I learned something new from this. I hope all of you did too. So excellent, excellent summary here. And I, like I said, bookmarking that for my package development adventures.
This is a really nicely detailed blog post that I think for our package authors, especially those submitting to CRAN, can definitely benefit from it. And you may have faced some of these issues yourself. I think I've talked about in the past episodes where we've submitted our packages to CRAN at Catchbrook Analytics and had them successfully pass all the tests on all images that CRAN has except for maybe one. And we called Solaris out earlier. I'll call him out again. but right in Sebastian's case, it was the Fedora Linux image. And it's hard to understate the utility of Docker for data science. I think that we're probably having more and more articles about Docker come across the R Weekly highlights each week. And I think maybe that's not necessarily a sign of just tastes changing from the curators, but I think it's a sign of the times and a sign of the data science environment that we're currently in. And I hate to say it, but if your package fails on CRAN's Fedora image, there really aren't many easy ways to recreate that environment and debug that. You know, assuming that you aren't using the Fedora operating system in your day-to-day work, there aren't really many ways to recreate that environment besides using Docker. That's really one of the only games in town to try to do that. And, you know, on a personal note, this is probably my biggest goal for 2023 is to create a containerized development environment for all of my R work in VS Code. So I am working towards doing that. I will shout out Bruno Rodriguez's book called Building Reproducible Analytical Pipelines with R. It's available now on Amazon. I know this is a podcast, audio only, and you can't see, but I am currently holding up that book because I am so excited that it just came in my mailbox the other day. And I believe that there are some pretty detailed sections there on setting up a containerized dev environment. So I am looking forward to diving into that and leveraging the power of Docker.
Awesome, Mike. And guess what? It came to my inbox too, so to speak. I have it on my bookshelf upstairs, so I am taking that with me next time I get some downtime reading. And congratulations again, Bruno, on that release. But yes, to the post at hand here, yeah, I would say in this day and age, to mimic these operating system, these architectures, the container method is by far your easiest on-ramp to it. It'll sound scary, but trust me, it is much easier than A, finding a spare system in your house to throw Linux on if you're not well-versed in Linux already, or B, spinning up a virtual machine, which can have a lot of overhead in and of itself and may not exactly mimic everything that you would experience in this architecture. So I would say, yeah, if you're a package author, you want to have a look at this because you don't want this to be the reason to get discouraged by your package submission. You want to take care of all this up front as best as you can. So I think with the tooling we have now, this doesn't seem like such a, you know, venturing into the void experience as it had in the past. We can get in front of these issues now. I won't say it will solve everything, but boy, it might solve a good 95% of it before you get to that submission process. So yeah, great, great post, Sebastian. And I am very excited once I get back on my releasing the crayon journey of utilizing these principles. And yes, Mike, I will take it as a personal mission to get you on a developer container setup before the end of this year. I will find a way, because you're looking at the dude here, the old timer that was able to adopt it. And literally, I'm using it as we speak on revamping this podcast website architecture. So I am living the life.
I am so close. I have written, so many Docker files for deploying Shiny apps individually, but just have not gotten to the point of making that my development environment. So I'm very close, very close. It shouldn't be too hard.
Very good. And you know what else is close, Mike? A lot of great additional content in this issue itself. And we're going to take a few minutes to talk about our additional finds. And yes, you did a bit of foreshadowing what I was going to call out, because I've been wanting to talk about this publicly for a while, because I do have a close connection to the author of this, of Will Landau, with his, what you mentioned, Mike, earlier, his new release of the Crew package. And at a high level, this is a new framework to spin up distributed workers in a much more performant way than what we've seen in the past. This is actually piggybacking off a newer, I don't know how new it is, but a new library called NNQ, which is kind of like a successor to things that Will and I have looked at in the past, called ZeroMQ and others for a messaging queue system. But Will has big, big plans for this. In fact, this issue of Our Weekly has three links for you to look at here. First, about the Crew package itself, which is a great way to get started, with great articles on all the nuts and bolts behind this. But get this, we've been talking about asynchronous workers here, right? You can fold Crew into a Shiny app to put as your back end for asynchronous processing, and take it from somebody who's been looking at this a little bit with colleagues at my day job. This is a much easier on-ramp than some of the other asynchronous frameworks. So I think this is a great time. If you've been scared of, say, the Promises package and integrating that with Future into your Shiny apps, have a look at Crew, folks. The hype is real. We literally had a project where I had a developer who had never used Crew before, took one day to put it into a Shiny app. One day. I spent 3 weeks trying to get Promises and Future into my Shiny app in the past. So this is a very big development in the Shiny space, even if that was a nice byproduct of what Will's vision is. It just kind of magically became a great use case for it. So definitely check that out. And Will also has a call to action for the future of Crew, is to have community contributions for what we call launcher plugins to integrate Crew with other scheduler systems, not too dissimilar to what ClusterMQ has done to interface with different grid engine systems. But if you have access to things like AWS Batch, Google Cloud, Kubernetes, or some of these other high-performant kind of distributed back-end cloud services, get in touch with Will. He would love to partner with you on getting an ecosystem of plugins that sit on top of Crew, so that we can make the experience of going to, say, AWS for our high-demand computing just as easy as it would be on your local system. This is a big development in this space. If I didn't hype it enough, I'm trying to hype it as much as I can here, because we think this is a game changer for HPC and R. So you heard my praise of it. So stay tuned in this space. I think there's a lot more to come.
That is going to be huge, because we have a client at Catchbrook that is in the process of migrating, that are thinking about migrating their HPC workloads to AWS. So I think this is very, very timely, and perhaps we can even get involved in trying to create that ecosystem of plugins to boost Crew. And super excited about that package as well, and always happy to throw up an alley-oop for you to dunk home, Eric. So thank you for letting us know about the Crew package.
Of course.
And everything that's going on there. It's super exciting. One additional find I had is Absalon has a blog post and accompanying Shiny app around their Data for Good project that visualizes global access to freshwater resources. I think in particular, renewable freshwater resources. And it looks like it's a fairly simple leaflet map followed by two e-charts for R line charts. But there are some really nice aesthetic qualities that make it really easy to interpret and play around with. So try it out yourself. And then maybe the last thing that I'll wrap up with for this episode is if you are in a position to hire data scientists, data engineers, or software engineers, please consider reaching out to the many folks who were recently laid off at Posit. These are friends of Eric and mine who are extremely talented developers and community leaders who would be a giant asset to any team that's lucky enough to have them. So just wanted to put that out there in case folks are looking to hire.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. I've been watching this space quite a bit, and yeah, we've always wanted to send our support to those of you that have been affected by this. But yeah, these are very talented people. We've had great pleasure of interacting with, say, at previous conferences or projects. So definitely keep on a lookout for these talented folks that can definitely help your organization, I'm sure, quite easily. And what else can help? Well, the rest of the R Weekly issue itself. We've had great fun giving you our summary, but there's much more in this issue. So where can you find that? It's easy. Go to rweekly.org. You'll find the link, the issue, right directly on the front page. If you want to contribute back to the project, we love your contributions. The easiest way, in this host's humble opinion, is to give us a new link or a resource, a new package or whatnot, in the upcoming issue draft. And that's just all linked directly on the front page, or you go directly to the Markdown formatted draft. We ain't got no Word documents in our weekly, folks. It's all marked out all the time. So you don't have to worry about scraping data out of Word documents and putting it in our weekly. It's very simple, straightforward. So it's all on GitHub, all linked directly on the front page. And if you want to get in touch with us, you got a few different ways. We got a contact page directly in the episode show notes that you see right here in this episode's in your podcast player. Also, if you are using a more modern podcast app like Fountain or Podverse, you can send us a little boost along the way. We have details of how to get lined up with that in the show notes as well. And also, please get in touch with us on social media. We love to hear how you've benefited from these resources. And like we said earlier, if you've been on your adventures in data science and putting our models in production, we'd love to hear about that too. Anything on your mind. I can be found on Twitter sporadically with @TheRCast, and I am also on Mastodon with @RPodcast at podcastindex.social. And Mike, where can the listeners find you?
Likewise, on Twitter @Mike_Ketchbrook, but more so on Mastodon @Mike_Thomas at fostodon.org.
Awesome stuff, my friend, and another great, great episode as always. And like I said, we will be off next week because I don't think the fam's going to let me bring the portable mic and a keyboard out on the beach because it will probably be destroyed. And plus, it's vacation time. I'm trying to get away from the screen a little bit before some real hard work begins after I get back. So we will hopefully you all have a great holiday week for those in the U.S. It'll be the 4th of July, so enjoy your time off there if you have plans there. But otherwise, we hope to see you back here with another new edition of our weekly highlights in 2 weeks from now.